política energética euroasiática. En realidad, el descubrimiento de hidrocarburos en el Mediterráneo Oriental provocó un conflicto multilateral en el que la huella militar es todavía reducida, pero que considerando que ninguna de las causas que lo originaron tienen perspectivas de solucionarse a corto o mediano plazo, tiende a ir adquiriendo intensidad.
En tanto, en Honduras, el periodista Milton Benítez del colectivo Perro Amarillo mantiene firme su posición de no claudicar ante las presiones y amenazas que recibe por su trabajo como comunicador social.
Ha sido bastante retador hacer comunicaciones en Honduras, el país más violento y que tiene junto a México el cobro de homicidios de periodistas y defensores de derechos humanos más elevado del continente. Yo creo que ese reto me hace un compromiso de no romper con esa necesidad que vive nuestra población de ser víctima de un sicariato comunicacional que deviene de esas matrices informativas de las grandes transnacionales, de construir una sociedad de lo uno en relación a un sujeto sujetado y que le construyen la verdad a través de las comunicaciones, a través de un espectro que debería ser un bien colectivo. Estas fueron las razones de las comunicaciones, pero que en los últimos años el 97% de las comunicaciones están en manos privadas promulgando un derecho. Es decir, ahí ya hay un conflicto de base. Empresas con fines de lucro defendiendo un derecho humano o promulgando un derecho humano como es el derecho a la libertad de prensa. Eso lo entendió muy bien después de los consensos de Washington. Sin embargo, creo que es donde se agudizó más esa mediatización de la pobreza, de la hegemonía, del imperio y de las diferentes estructuras de corrupción para empobrecer a nuestros pueblos, para implementar modelos extractivistas, pues tenía como objetivo consolidar los medios de comunicación para socializar la verdad que quiere ese capital monopólico que existe en nuestros países, para lavar la corrupción, para lavar la impunidad. Entonces, yo soy un sociólogo, vengo de estudiar de Chile, con una expertise en ciencias políticas, y me toca empezar a abrir las comunicaciones con un compromiso de construir esa subjetividad dentro de una sociedad que tenga por lo menos la forma de establecer la diferencia, ¿no? Entonces, el proyecto fue cobrando vigencia, pudimos ir generando opinión, me desligo de la academia, veo que la academia también estaba replegado a ese poder mediático, una academia cobarde que ya comenzaba a hacer estudios, pero más para ofrecérselos al modelo extractivista, no sacar a la población de su encuadramiento colectivo. Entonces, también era otra forma de comunicar enajenamiento, alienación. Entonces, comenzamos a desarrollar nuestro trabajo periodístico bajo dos elementos, lo deontológico y lo ético, siéndole fiel a ese destinatario que es las poblaciones víctimas de estas corporaciones televisivas. Entonces, nos encontramos con un enemigo acérrimo que era el peligro a seguir con nuestro trabajo. Sufrimos censuras en todos los medios de comunicación.
¿Algún sitio, correo, alguna forma de que partes interesadas se puedan comunicar contigo?
Sí, pueden comunicarse a milton-abenitez@yahoo.com o en la página del Perro Amarillo. De hecho, ahí están colocados todos los documentos de los cuales pues, de manera abusiva Estados Unidos ha estado publicando fotografías que solo las podían tener ellos, porque fueron las fotografías que en su momento, hace muchos años, pues fui a sacar la visa. Y entonces sí sería oportuno, vuelvo a repetir, milton-abenitez@yahoo.com o en su defecto que nos visiten a la página del Perro Amarillo o tú.
Era Milton Benítez, sociólogo, periodista e integrante del colectivo Perro Amarillo, una entidad comunicadora que opera en la Nación Centroamericana de Honduras. Y que concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
So, coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org, as you're listening to the stream of Free Radio. So, coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org, as is usual at 6 o'clock on every Thursday evening, it's the, today is the March 21st edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. So, what we got today is, again, a focus on the largest encampment of homeless folks in one place in Santa Cruz, the 100 to 250 person Ross Camp. As some call it, Firo's Camp, as others call it, Gateway Plaza Camp, as still others call it. It's a camp that's right next to Highway 1 into the San Lorenzo River path, which, of course, alarms some passers-by, walkers-by, dog walkers, and bikers-by. There was a city council meeting. That's the Santa Cruz City Council. On Tuesday in the afternoon, a special session, which I'm going to play you a little bit from, hopefully much less than I did on Sunday when I played some from the regular session of last week. I should say the week before Tuesday a week ago. And I'm going to be kind of catching up on some other things as well. If you have any comments, criticisms, news bits you want to add to the longer Sunday show, which is likely to be coming at you on Sunday in 3 days, give me a call on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. That's the group I work with, at 423-4833. That's 423-4833 or 423-HUFF Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you want more information about the history of Huff, the history of homeless issues in Santa Cruz, current hot issues, and things of that sort, go to the Huff website, which is huffsantacruz.org. One word, small letters, huffsantacruz.org. So let's jump into it, and you'll hear what you will hear.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So a principal concern I have with these broadcasts is to put forth facts and the truth of things as I see it. And I'm a fallible person just like anybody else. I make mistakes. I only get partial views of what's going on. I correct myself, hopefully, as time goes on. I think I have in the past and will again. But I'll present a view even if it's not particularly fashionable or politic to do it. It may not be the easiest, smartest, most comfortable thing to do, but I do it anyway because it seems true to me. So the most recent issue that I've been talking a lot about is it's one I've been talking about for 30 years, but the most incarnation of that, the most recent crystallization of that issue is the Ross Camp, the camp where, as I mentioned earlier, you get the most homeless folks in Santa Cruz gathered at one place at one time, trying to survive and living in a kind of a de facto community of sorts. It's not always the most cooperative community. It's obviously not the most healthy community if you want to compare it with people who live in houses or live in rental areas or live even in comfortable vacation campsites in other parts of the state, county, and country. But it is, for homeless people, it's probably a better deal than other places. Now, there's some who disagree with me. Brent Adams, for example, who runs the day and night shelter program and has been pushing for sanctuary villages and other not bad ideas for homeless folks. Some seems to me a little rigid, a little tailored to cater to the sensibilities of some middle-class folks and grants from government agencies. But still, certainly a step up from the utter lack of services or very prison-like shelters and very limited shelters that currently exist in Santa Cruz, Pauli Loft, homeless lack of services centers stuff, which includes also the Rebele Family Shelter and the Page Smith Community House, not to mention the nearby River Street Shelter, which is in the same kind of general rubric overview over. It's in the same place out there at 115 Coral Street. So homeless people create their own encampments. They have for decades. People survive where they have to. And in Santa Cruz, as the rents have gotten worse and worse, as jobs have gotten harder and harder to get, particularly jobs that will enable you to rent, which is almost impossible in Santa Cruz for low-income people, as, you know, housing vouchers become less and less meaningful because landlords refuse to rent, the city becomes more and more of a gated community and a kind of a, with an invisible gates, or the gates kind of provided by police action and the threat of police action. People form their own campground out at Ross, partially in response to what was first the likelihood that there would be a court decision that essentially instituted old precedents that you would find in earlier court decisions, like the Robinson case back in the 60s, the Pottinger case in Miami, the Jones case and Spencer cases in Southern California and Los Angeles and San Diego, respectively, that in essence said something to the effect of, well, if you haven't got shelter for homeless people, you can't make it a crime for them to sleep everywhere. That is, so you can't make it a crime for them to fall asleep on public property, making it a crime to do that on absolutely all public property, because that means you're criminalizing their homeless status. And that was reaffirmed some years ago, but most recently in September in the Boise decision, Martin versus Boise, which I've talked about a lot and which you can find online, and which was actually given an, I think, a rather faulty exposition by the city attorney at the special session of the city council, but which is really motivating the city. And I'm going to kind of play for you a conversation I had with, I think he's Fernando, who's a reporter for Channel 8, I believe it is. He showed up yesterday, Wednesday, on the levee path right next to the Ross camp. Not sure it was because he was meeting with two of the city manager's deputies, Susie O'Hara and I guess Megan, and I'm sorry, Megan, don't remember your last name, who were there to sort of supposedly, and this is in quotes, assist the campers to clean up the campsite. And they were providing dumpsters. They're providing some trash pickups. And those are good things. I've asked for that often at the encampment spread throughout Santa Cruz for the last few decades. I think that's what's needed, as well as porta-potties, hand-washing stations. And indeed, there are now more porta-potties out there. I think there are 10 now, or at least 8. I was counting them yesterday as I kind of hustled up there, because I had a meeting, too, with the so-called Ross Camp Council, which is a group of 5 or 6 folks who have taken it upon themselves to get together because they want to make sure the Ross Camp doesn't get dispersed on April 17th, as the Santa Cruz City Council has now set a date for doing. And this, again, seems this their on-again, off-again thing. First it was March 15th, now it's April 17th. And the Ross Camp Council folks, who aren't representative of the Ross Camp in any polling sense or voting sense. They're individuals who live in the Ross Camp who want to make sure that they, at least, and hopefully anyone else in the Ross Camp who wants to join, are not driven away from this campground until and unless there really are real adequate shelter spaces or safe sleeping spaces or survival campgrounds where people can go that aren't religiously discriminatory, requiring you to do religious services that aren't unhealthy and overcrowded, as indeed the Ross Camp itself is, certainly appears to be. I'm not a great public health expert, but that's what the county health inspector, Arnie Leff, has said. But compared to, you know, living on the street alone or dodging the police and the Parks and Rec Rangers with their ticket books, no longer giving sleeping van tickets or camping tickets so much, but giving you their latest wrinkle is the, public nuisance tickets or being in a closed area or being in a park after dark tickets. They've got their substitute laws already to push you along and penalize you and fine you hundreds and hundreds of dollars that you can't pay, ruining your credit, threatening your driver's license, threatening ultimately if you ever get a job to garnish your wages and so forth. So the Ross Camp Council folks met with Attorney Anthony Prince yesterday again and are planning very specifically how to show that the shelters being offered by the city are completely inadequate. And what the real objective seems to be is to run the Ross Camp people away because they're a visible proof of poverty and the failure of Santa Cruz City's social service system. And it's being attacked from all kinds of areas. It's being attacked from the right by the massive numbers of people organized by Lynn Renshaw and the Santa Cruz Neighbors type groups to take back Santa Cruz folks in more genteel garb, coming down and though speaking quite outspokenly and venomously about these are drugs, this is a drug problem. All these people are drug users. You got to lock them up or drive them out of town or you got to put them in drug problems, drug programs. And in other words, there was a sort of a hysterical edge to all this testimony. Our children are at risk. There's been no indication of any particular child who has been hurt by a homeless person from the Ross encampment that I've ever heard of. And they've been there for 5 months. Now, it's true. People are shooting up drugs in the Ross camp. And that's not something that is acceptable to middle-class people who have been bombarded with anti-drug paranoia and propaganda for years. And I'm not saying shooting up heroin or meth or overuse of any drugs, alcohol, whatever, or many of these psychiatric drugs that are so freely prescribed is a particularly good idea. And doing so in a visible public way looks kind of embarrassing and awkward and kind of frightening, too. But some people are addicted to these things, and that's just how it is. They're going to use them until such time as they decide to get off them, and also as such time as the facilities are available. And, well, I've heard it said from some people that they got off drugs because they were jailed and they were forced to get off drugs and go cold turkey. I've never seen really reputable, systematic proof that this is a good way to get off drugs or an effective way to get off drugs or even a successful way to get off drugs for people generally. In fact, prisons are usually places where you can get on drugs. The sales system inside, I'm told, is as effective, if not more effective, than outside. And the inclination and pressure to actually keep taking drugs is pretty heavy as well. Again, I can't speak with expertise. I've only been in jail myself for a month, and that was 20 years ago when we were being jailed for serving free food in San Francisco with Food Not Bombs. But these are the stories I've been told in the very, brief kind of anecdotal information I've gotten. So before we go to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, which I'm going to talk about a little bit, this most recent session that happened 2 days ago, the special session, which was set up supposedly to provide for a particular transitional safe sleeping area or transitional encampment so that they'd have an excuse to close the Ross Camp on April 17th without getting sued by the campers or by other folks who step in who are homeless, who have no place to go, but who are driven away. And that would be one of the Ross campers, I guess, saying, you can't really force us to leave unless you've got a good place for us to go. And the fact that you can give a handful of people a place or even a significant minority a place is not adequate justification for forcing the next person to leave. And so they're creating, the city is creating a mythology. The city government, Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl, and Martine Bernal, and the Santa Cruz City Council, headed largely by Cynthia Matthews, but also by Justin Cummings and others who are supposedly supposed to be progressive. Mayor Watkins, a conservative, reactionary, I would say, actually, and something of a control freak, in my view. They're creating the mythology that there's going to be adequate shelter for people to go to, or if not, well, fuck them. But they don't say that, of course. Anyway, this is me talking to Fernando of, I think it's KSAN, Channel 8. I could have that wrong. He happened to be on the path. I was walking away from a meeting by Anthony Prince, the attorney who's advising the Ross Camp Council on how to proceed with their call for an injunction that stops the city from closing the Ross Camp unless and until they actually have real, adequate, and accessible shelter. And here's the conversation that I had with him. You'll hear him asking me the initial question.
Council members said that, yeah, they have space for like 25 tents. They figured 2 to the tent, 50 people. That's not even enough to cover.
Of course not. But you see, they want to stop the Boise versus Martin decision, which is if you haven't got shelter, you can't arrest people or drive them away.
Right. He mentioned that.
That's what the situation is.
So you got to have to show some type of effort.
They're going to claim that campground, along with the barbed wire campground that's out of River Street. If you remember, I don't know if you're familiar with that one. There's a campground they had set up for a while.
Yeah, that was enclosed.
Right, it was enclosed. It had 40 or 50 tents, plus the fact that the campuses that are already now full, or often full, 7th Avenue and the Laurel Street campground, not campgrounds, shelters, will be used. But remember, we're not just talking about the Ross, which has several hundred people at least. We're talking
about...
How
many people would you say are here?
Hard to say.
I mean, because some person said it just explodes during the night.
Say again?
That just quadrupled.
Oh, it got bigger and bigger, you know, for sure. I don't know about this last night, but...
Well, Dave...
In fact, the city is claiming that fewer people are there during the night. And this is, of course, opportunistic and useful for their notion, because a smaller number of people in the Ross camp that are actually camping there, not just, say, assembling during the day and chatting and visiting and buying and selling, they would say drugs or bikes, because that's another one of the claims. Although, frankly, I don't see a lot of that. I mean, I think there's a significant amount of drug use. No doubt a significant amount of drug sales, and there's some bikes, probably some chop shops in there, sure, you know, as there would be anywhere else in town. But the fact is, there's shelter for homeless people, and that is a thing apart from any criminal activity. And if criminal activity is being claimed, then the police can go and deal with the criminal activity, but not deny the majority of people or even individuals who are engaging in criminal activity the shelter that they have a right to. Everyone has a right to shelter, to sleep at night, regardless of what they do. People in jail have a right to sleep at night. You might want to punish people, but you stop at a certain point, because that's what we call one of the positive benefits, supposedly, of civilization. Anyway, I don't know if there's a... It's been estimated there's somewhere between 100 and 300 people there, based on the number of tents, the size of the tents, and so forth. It's hard to tell how many people are actually there. More from this dialogue and conversation with the mainstream media reporter.
I don't know. Is the city council? I mean, we've got this place in Depot. Clearly, it's not enough people or enough space. Are they just kicking the can? Is that what we're seeing here?
By this place in Depot, he means Lot 24, which is a place near Depot Park, which really was the thing pushed forward by Susie O'Hara, who is sort of the city's go-to woman. I call her, sweet-talking Sue, because she talks a lot of sugary stuff, of positive expectations about wonderful things that will be available by April 17th so the Ross Camp can be essentially bulldozed. But, in fact, she is not being accurate, she's not being true, and she has a track record of breaking her word on the homeless population, most recently with the River Street campground, or the Boneyard Barbed Wire campground, as I call it, because that's what it was called, the Boneyard by the city. It was where, I think, equipment was stored. It's right along Highway 9, right before you leave the city limits, sort of right past the transit bus storage area. And it was, you know, a campground for 5 or 6 months in the last year at a rather expensive cost of $75,000 to $90,000, and it was topped by barbed wire, plus little peace flags that were put up there to make it frilly, sort of cute. But in fact, critical as I was of it, it did provide space for 60 or 70 people, depending. And they could store their stuff. They could leave their stuff there during the day. They could be there during the day if they needed to. They couldn't walk in and out. That was not allowed because it might terrorize some of the people who live nearby, because we know homeless people have sort of contagious criminality and you never can trust them and so forth and so on. And they had three levels of security initially, a huge police station, a mobile police station, a long van that was a police van, kind of a mobile police trailer. And then they had first alarm security guards right in front of the Boneyard, the 1220 River Street campground. And then inside they had their own monitors that they paid. So they had three levels of so-called security, again, treating people like either criminals or children. Now, it was less that way than it was at places like River Street Shelter or the Paul Lee Loft or the Homeless Lack of Services Center or the 7th Avenue Winter Shelter. And I don't know, I can't really comment on the Association of Faith Communities 20-person shelter. I don't really know. And I don't know much about the Laurel Street Women's Shelter run by Salvation Army, though, given some of their track record in the past, I'm not terribly hopeful. But what the city proposed to open day before yesterday at the Tuesday City Council meeting was on the 17th, they claimed that they would reopen the Boneyard campground for 50 or 60 tents. They would also set up a 50 or 60 tented area for out near the Depot Park for nighttime-only use. And that's what we're talking about. Does that have anything to do with the number of people at Ross Camp? No. How could the council waste its time with this? Don't ask me. I guess you can. I can speculate that their main objective is to placate the mob of angry people who didn't even want to do that. They were not going to even allow this Depot Park to open up because it was, there are various excuses, too near a school, a traffic problem, inadequately managed, too quickly done without public comment. In other words, they would rather see these people spill out into the community in the hopes that they would be made so miserable they'd all leave, which doesn't happen. It didn't happen before. It can't happen now. It's far less likely to happen given the Boise versus Martin decision. And there is a lawsuit brewing. So it's really ridiculous. Ridiculous that these people are fired up to believe this. And it's partially real estate interests and right-wing property folks who are they feel entitled to have their streets cleared of anybody poor in the area. Although they wouldn't put it that way. I mean, they put their rationalization for this is it's genuinely public safety. These are all a bunch of drug criminals that are going to be descending on the neighborhoods. You know, no evidence of this in terms of the numbers, the actual numbers of people, the actual crime rates in this situation. But this is spread around as sort of nasty, false information, or you might even say false news or fake news. Hey. Let's hear more.
They're trying to, I mean, some people understandably may be complaining about the Ross Camp. They're scared of the sight of homeless people. There's an increase in some various kinds of crime in the area because there's a concentration of people here. Not necessarily because it's homeless people. I mean, people in houses commit crimes too. In fact, they have more cover when they do it. But, you know, and then there's a lot of drug use because people are, a number of people here, of course, use illegal substances and self-medicate. You might too if you are outside. I don't know. I might. But in any case, they aren't providing services for this stuff. They don't want to do it. They just want to drive these people out of town and out of sight. That's my perception of it. And therefore, what they're doing to do this is they've declared, as I already told you, these four so-called shelter areas are supposed to be enough to cover the Ross Camp. But the problem is going to be there are hundreds of people not in the Ross Camp in Santa Cruz who are homeless. They're going to have to exclude all those people with their main objective being to eliminate this because there are people in the business area who don't want this camp here. Because there are local neighbors who are apprehensive about it. Because there's an organizing that has been going on around the Santa Cruz neighbors. Lynn Renshaw has done some organizing. She brought dozens, if not scores, of people to city council last night, all of whom are talking about these drug users. You got to get them out of town. You know, no stats, of course. So, and she doesn't want campgrounds set up anywhere in the area either. She just wants people to disappear. Now, they did that in Germany successfully in the 30s, but I don't think we want that solution here, if you follow my drift.
And they don't want you guys over there at Depot Park either.
Right. So the problem, the reality of it is this attorney who's working on this situation is training homeless people on how to use this Martin versus Boise decision to say, leave me alone unless you have a shelter space for me to go to. And also trying to get the courts to say, you cannot close this campground on April 17th unless you can guarantee there will be a place for people to go.
And being clear about this, leave me alone means leave me alone unless you have probable cause to believe I'm guilty of some kind of crime. But the crime cannot be sleeping outside. The crime cannot be surviving outside by resting in an area that the city is suddenly of one of the many areas that they've declared closed in order to drive people away without providing any other facilities for people to go to. It can't be a curfew on being human in Santa Cruz. That it can't be that. That's just not acceptable to the courts at this time. Now, when it reaches the Supreme Court, all bets are off. They might turn that right around. And that's why it's going to require a lot more organizing with homeless folks, a lot more people standing up for their rights, a lot more of an understanding of renters and low-income people that they're facing exactly the same situation, just a couple paychecks away or you know, a couple of rent raises away in Santa Cruz, because we have this absurd surrender to the reactionary real estate forces that's going on instead of any kind of meaningful freeze on the rents, which we had last year but has been taken off because Justin Cummings would not go with the three candidates, I should say the three council members, Brown, Crone, and Glover, who initially tried to reinstitute that just eviction protections and rent freeze in January, but he ran with the reactionary pack and turned around, just as he also made a similar retreat at this last council meeting, in which he is, in essence, going for the April 17th closure date, and so are the other council members. I asked Drew Glover specifically, and I'm going to be playing that, and he agreed in a conversation he had with the Ross Camp Council folks that he would put forward a resolution making clear that at least in his position was that they could not support any kind of Ross Camp closure if there's no place for people to go. He started to do that at the council meeting, but he never finished it. He was interrupted by Susie O'Hara, who seemed to really run the meeting, even though she's not on the council. She's just part of the staff. But in fact, for years, the staff has led around the city council by the nose. They do what the staff suggests. Glover, for the first time that I've seen, really tried to get his own interns to work as a kind of an alternate staff to work up resolutions, but he was thwarted by Mayor Watkins, who wouldn't put his stuff on the agenda, and he got put on the agenda and then was defeated by the flight and the defection of Justin Cummings, who was voting with a majority against him. On this occasion, however, he didn't even formally propose as a motion that there be a reaffirmation that the April 17th would not be the closing date unless there was specifically, for each individual in that camp, places for people to go. And that was, he broke his word on that, as far as I'm concerned. He insists that he didn't. Perhaps we'll give him a call and get him to explain his position. But you can hear the actual specifics, because I'm going to be playing that after I finish this KSAN, this radio, I guess it's TV interview that they were doing. I don't even know if it ever showed up, but I audioed it, and you get to hear it.
Simply providing a few token places is is not enough. And that's the issue that some of us feel is really the key issue. At least I do. So.
That's right on. Dave, your last name again?
Norse, Robert Norse. N-O-R-S-E. I don't live here. I'm with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Perfect. Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Rob. What's going on, you, Dave?
That's okay. Don't get my cold.
Oh, okay.
We're going to go back to the first conversation we had.
Hey, don't forget. Hey, you got to get down to the...
I know. They're going to be down there. But I also heard that you guys had been asking for me earlier, like a couple of days ago, so... I was trying to get all the press that had asked for me.
This is Mama Shannon,
Shannon
from the Ross Camp Council.
And something by the mayor, and so like NPR? NPR?
National Public Radio.
And a couple other people came up here asking for me, and so I'm never sure which one, because people kept coming to my door and saying that there were reporters up here, so I'm like trying to cover all of them and do all the meetings at the same time.
I'm not with NPR, but nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And you are?
Felix Cortez with Channel 8.
Felix?
Bill
Channel
8. In or something, so I had to come up here.
Hello. Any impressions, Felix, you have for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
I just report the news. I have no opinions.
I bet you do.
Thanks, Robert.
I know he reports the news, but he has opinions.
Definitely.
But I think if you do interviews with someone who represents the homeless community, you need to also do interviews with people who are members of the homeless community that represent, not just representatives.
No, I'm not. I just
yes, I
by.
Do. And I've been a representative and an advocate and
there's
worked with Robert
which he is
and worked separate from Robert for many years. I've been housed and homeless in this town. I raised my children here. They graduated from high school here. And so I try to make sure that people understand that a lot of this doesn't represent some of us.
You know? I hear you. Yeah.
You know, because Robert, he has his heart is in the right place, his intentions are correct, but he doesn't live here. And he doesn't deal with the stigma that we deal with every day. He doesn't deal with the bias. He doesn't deal. I can't judge you on your color of your skin or what race or sexual orientation you are, but people can tell me to go home and get out of their town and to fucking do this and that and the other thing because I'm homeless. It's okay to be biased and to judge somebody by the fact, by their income or by their living situation, but it's not okay to judge somebody by their sexual orientation or their skin color. I think that's an quality that we need to address, like, immediately.
Good luck with everything.
Yeah, you too, Felix.
Who's the attorney?
Good luck. His name is Anthony Prince. He comes from Berkeley.
Oh, yeah, I know Prince. Is he down there?
Yeah, he's down there right now.
Yeah. Are city leaders down there?
No, it's a meeting of the plaintiffs to try to make sure the lawsuit gets together. City leaders don't want a lawsuit, and we don't want the city leaders muscling in on the strategy that we're going to use because they want to stop the lawsuit. Their objective is to get rid of the camp no matter what happens to the people here. That's the problem.
And Anthony's saying no, and Anthony's using the law. We'll sue you guys if you don't have enough housing for all of us.
Right, and since they won't, because that would mean not only having enough housing for the people here, but for the people in the city who are homeless. And that's several, 1,000 to 2,000 people. A lot of people. I think it's 1,200 by point count, but that was an underestimate most recently.
Have Anthony give me a ring.
Give me your card.
He's coming.
He knows you are Felix. You really should talk to the Ross Camp Council. That's like the woman who was here before, Ma Shannon is. Let me give you Alicia's number. She's a liaison with the camp. She doesn't live here, but she's been helping organize the lawsuit. Her name is Alicia Kuhl, K-U-H-L.
Somewhere, any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. To save just a little bit of money, won't have to drive too far. cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs, finally see what it means to be living. Mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I say, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school, that's what I did.
That was Tracy Chapman. The song was Fast Car. So here's a report on stuff that's happening around California, but particularly the article isn't focused on Santa Cruz, but the practice happens in Santa Cruz. It's a new report showing how towing practices in California punish poor people. This is an online report, Towed into Debt, How Towing Practices in California Punish Poor People. And it's a sort of a lengthy report, goes on for 38 pages, it looks like. But there is a sort of a summary, and I'm going to read some of that now. And here we go. Returning to your parking place only to find your car is missing and has been towed by the city is a terrible surprise in the best of circumstances. Your car will be held hostage until you make the inconvenient trip to the tow yard and pay astronomical fees to get your own car back. For people who are low income, however, the consequences of a towed vehicle can be devastating. The cost to retrieve a car after a city-ordered tow is out of reach for many. Thus, for many Californians, a vehicle tow means the permanent loss of their car, and along with it, the loss of employment, access to education, and medical care, and for some, their only shelter. Nonetheless, local governments throughout California regularly tow vehicles, as does Santa Cruz, for relatively minor offenses, outstanding parking tickets, lapsed vehicle registration, and remaining parking in one place for more than 72 hours. And we had a discussion with the police chief about this several months ago, when not able to change his mind on the issue of warning his officers not to take false reports and not to harass people who are having problems, who are, you know, simply trying to park within the law, within the 72-hour period allowed on Santa Cruz streets by state law. Despite constitutional limits on the government's ability to seize a vehicle in these non-emergency situations, cities routinely tow legally parked cars that pose no threat to public safety. The actual and consequential costs to California are too high to allow towing to be anything other than a tool to protect the public. By these measures, California's current policies are not working. The report reveals the current overreach of government towing in cities across California. After reviewing and analyzing data on government-ordered tows, not including private tows, new data and research show that the scope of the problem is significant. In just 1 month in Los Angeles alone, government agencies towed 9,400 vehicles and sold 2,400 towed vehicles. In 2016, the city of Santa Cruz ordered more than 42,000 tows and sold more than 5,300 vehicles at lien sales. Analysts estimate that public agencies in California towed nearly 1 million vehicles in 2016. And, of course, we don't have stats for Santa Cruz, but that would be an interesting issue for any researchers. If anyone wants to take on that project, give me a call on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-4833. The most minor reasons for tow are some of the most common and have the most devastating results. Statewide, over one-fourth of tows are conducted just because the owner had unpaid parking tickets, lapsed registration, or parked in one place for 72 hours. Vehicles towed for these reasons are 2 to 6 times more likely to be sold at lien sale than the average towed car. In San Francisco, 50% of the vehicles towed for unpaid parking tickets and 57% of the vehicles towed for lapsed registration were sold by the tow company, while only 9% of all vehicles towed were sold. Getting a car back after a tow is expensive. As a result of all the add-on and administrative fees, the average price people must pay after a debt collection tow is over $1,100. Tow fees are often unfair. Daily storage rates at California tow lots are at least twice as expensive as the daily rate at parking garages in the same part of town, and in some cases up to 12 times higher than market rates. Cities are losing money on tows, especially when the reason for the tow is someone's inability to pay government fines and fees. Towed vehicles are sold at lien sales. Towed vehicles sold at lien sales in San Diego generally accrue over $3,000 in fees and fines, but the average sale price for these vehicles is about $565. So, if you want to hear more about this particular report, check out Towed Into Debt Report. Go online, look for it, and you'll find it. But I wanted to read this press release from Matt Kovic. A new report shows how towing practices in California punish poor people. This is really a story about the report. California's towing laws are a lose-lose-lose. People lose their cars, tow yards lose the opportunity to have paying customers on their lot, and local governments lose the opportunity to collect unpaid revenue. California's existing towing practices push people deeper into poverty while doing nothing to benefit local governments. It's time California put an end to this cruel and devastating practice, says Maya Ingram, legislative attorney with the ACLU of California. Towing is an unnecessarily harmful way for local governments to enforce non-safety-related laws. Western Center's Director of Policy Advocacy, Mike Harold, describes the practice as the equivalent of using a sledgehammer to crack an egg. Assemblymember Daniel Chu has introduced AB 516 in the state legislature to curb the practice of harmful and unnecessary towing. The bill seeks to eliminate three types of poverty-related tows. Tows where a person has five or more unpaid parking tickets, tows where the car registration is more than 6 months out of date, tows where a car has been parked for 72 hours on a public street without being moved. By alleviating non-safety-related towing practices, local governments in California will no longer be able to punish people living in poverty by taking away one of their most valuable assets. And that's, of course, very significant in Santa Cruz. You've heard many a time on this show people describing how they used to have a vehicle they lived in, but they didn't because it was towed away for unpaid fines and fees. And, of course, as I mentioned before, actually Alicia Kuhl was one of the people who led the protest and press conference with Police Chief Andy Mills, demanding that Officer Joe Habe, the enforcement officer, stop harassing her. And other people complained about harassment by police enforcement agencies when they were told when they'd only been parking for a fraction of the 72-hour period they're allowed to park. But a neighbor had complained, and so a cop came and essentially threatened them to move them along instead of advising the neighbor that the neighbor was making a false police report unless they had evidence that the car had been there continuously for a period of more than 72 hours, which became the issue and which hasn't been resolved. I put in a Public Records Act request and just got a second delay on that, any information from that request, where I asked to get some idea of how many citations, warnings, and other kinds of administrative actions around vehicles Officer Joe Habe had been given in the last year, so we can get some idea as to what the practice is, at least by this particular officer, who has been sort of selected and pointed out as a particularly, should we say, over-eager enforcement officer. Still no word on that yet. It may actually require a court lawsuit to get the city to release this kind of information. But frequently just continuing to publicize it, and maybe some kind of public protest might have some effect. We'll see. So I'll be getting back to the city council shortly, but first let's take a swing out onto the streets. Here's some interviews from last weekend at the Food Not Bombs weekly, or actually twice weekly, feed out at the community shared meal, if you will, at the main post office.
Here at Food Not Bombs, it's the 17th of March. It's a little after 4. I'm talking with
Rox Roy.
And Rox Roy, what has happened in the last week that you think we should know about, those of us who are new to the streets?
I don't think anybody's new to the streets, and the same thing is going on over and over and over, repeat itself, and not really happening. You know? There need to be a big homeless shelter, big one, humongous, with drugs, you know, screening or drug program.
A bathroom, a bed,
a bathroom,
a kitchen.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
perhaps a spa.
Yeah, everybody needs
a shower.
Everybody needs a dry place to sleep.
Yeah, and a warm place.
The money is here to do it, so we got to get on the ball.
You got to get on their balls, pretty much.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Any hassles from cops or anything of that sort?
No. No hassles. No hassles.
That's good.
Everything's okay with me. Finally.
Now, when you crash at night, where do you usually crash? What general area are you crashing in?
General area I crash, I live at the shelter.
Which one?
The one over there.
Coral Street?
Yeah.
How is it?
It's okay.
Paul Lee Loft?
Yeah. I've been there for a year. Over here.
And is it full right now?
No. It's not full.
Many newcomers coming in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything you think that needs to be said to improve the facilities there? How's the? You got cold water? You got hot water? What do you got for shower?
I'm not going to talk too much.
Uh-huh. Arrest this man. That's right. Kick this boy out.
Yeah. That's what they want to do.
And we've been talking with
Rox Roy Martin.
Thanks, Rox.
39 years in Santa Cruz.
And still, like,
yeah,
still standing here.
Still standing.
Thank you, man.
God bless.
That was an issue at the Paul Lee Loft, and indeed, around the homeless lack of services center was their failure to provide hot water for week after week. And it's his drawing back from talking about it makes me wonder if it still isn't a problem. And I think there was some controversy about that at the last Huff meeting or the one before last. I don't have any new information on that at the moment. Right. Should be on free radio Thursday night.
So, when people hear...
Down here talking, do you want to be anonymous or shall I say who you are?
No. I didn't get hooked up before.
Well, we have a guy who got a citation for just simply walking along the railroad tracks. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I was just totally in the railroad track, and they come up on me, and then I had to... Well, I guess...
You don't
want to
get caught.
Well, I know
it. Looks like... Was it a cop or a SCHP who gave you a ticket?
No, he's a cop. I get the black cars.
How many cops were involved?
Maybe four.
And what did they tell you?
They just don't want to see my ID because they used to give you a warning one time. Then another girl said they don't give you no warning, nothing. It's got you.
And there were, you say there were four cars?
Well, it's four people all together. There's a pickup, too.
I got you. What time of day? Looks like it was around 8 in the morning?
Yeah, around 8. But it was still cold. And
March 8th, it says.
Yeah, he said 30 days. Take care of it in 30 days.
Yeah, you probably have longer, but if you want to take care of it...
Then you go talk to him tomorrow.
Yeah, just go in there. I would say ask for a court date, go back, plead not guilty, ask for a trial, and then give a call to Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Ask for continuance. First rule.
And you can do that, too.
Oh, continuance.
First rule, ask for
continuance.
Yeah, you give me that one before and I read it.
You might, or blow it off. If you blow it off, of course, it will go to collection eventually.
Well, what's going to happen, they say they put it in a pewter. But in 30 days, the pewter kicks it out, and then they'll come...
I don't think they're going to... They don't arrest for this kind of stuff, but they will send it south for failure to pay, is what I think. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't guarantee it either way. I just know what they sometimes do and other times don't. Well, anything you want to say about this for free radio?
No, that's all I kind of want to say. I know they weren't fair about it. So I pick up trash over in Live Oak with my grabber, and nobody ever bothered me over there. And over there, I met the guy, Rowan Camp, that young guy who cleans up. I talked to him, helped him a little bit. So I've done a good deed, and then they go and find me.
So they give you a nice ticket. Yeah. For 9.60.10010A, trespassing, bullshit city. So Officer Rossell.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I was about to forget about it to today. You know, I finally looked at it. I was at McDonald's and finally looked and there is pretty close. Tuesday's the last day.
Thank you, Jerry. Sorry about that, man. All right.
Sir, would you like to give a brief interview? He's backing away.
Definitely.
In his pooch, you're getting out of here.
I'm against everything.
He refuses to. Could be put on audio. I don't have tape anymore. I just have audio.
I don't get interviewed for men with glasses.
Oh, I could tell. You could. Hey, don't call me Four Eyes. You want to make some of it? I got my glasses. Taking off my glasses here. Hello.
All right, Robert. It's been great seeing you, really. Yeah. Cool, man.
All right. Now, we want to go down memory lane here. Have you...
Is that on?
Yeah, of course it is. Now, we've got every word you've said there, but I'm not saying who you are. I want you to notice I kept you...
Disclose that you're recording me, and I...
No. You have no expectation of privacy in a public place. I'm sorry. Speaking
here
of...
Here we go.
Yeah. What's the name of that dog? I have forgotten.
Lafayette.
I'm sorry. It's the same dog, too. I remember.
Yes.
Hey, Lafayette. Hey, you good old doggy.
Pooch, a good boy.
Well, I'm going to blow this guy's cover because he is an old-time homeless activist who hasn't been seen in years. At least I haven't seen much of him. Although occasionally he shows up when I'm in the hospital or some such thing. I don't know what the story is.
I'm going to...
Lisa.
And Lisa, you're on your bike, but you're probably indoors, right?
Yes.
Have you abandoned your quest for greater justice for those outside?
Have I abandoned my quest?
Did you ever have a quest for greater justice?
Yes, of course.
Well, so what's with the quest? What's going on? Let me introduce you to Rutabaga Rick over here. Rick, this is Lisa. Lisa, Rick.
Hey.
And your name is?
Joa.
Sorry, Joa. I think I may... Do I know you?
Yeah. I was checking out your mobile.
Oh, cool.
Is your mobile right?
Yeah, it's mine. Any reports from the street, or is anybody... Remember the street anymore these days?
You know, they've... Haven't been too bad, I guess, the last couple of days. But they were super harassing us when it was raining. You know, like, hanging out under the eaves. For trying to just get out of the rain.
No. You've got to own the property to get out of the rain. Now, come on, son. Show some respect for the property owners.
Right? Like, I was like 15 minutes of trying to stay out of the rain. You know, maybe we were here a little bit later because it had just let up.
Squatting downtown.
Squatting downtown, yeah.
Stake your claim.
it was getting rough, you know. There we were, just like eating some soup, I think.
Eating and spreading disease of various kinds. Hepatitis A, perhaps?
There weren't like any pigeons or anything around, you know. So I think the
waiting
spread.
Waiting to panhandle, no doubt.
No, we'd already had our food. So
shooting up secretly, perhaps.
No, not right there.
Oh, well, this just has some respect.
There's a place for that. Like, whoever there might have done that, I don't know.
You need to go poo-poo or pee-pee?
You know, I've considered it when I've had a hard time finding a bathroom. You know, because you just got to go somewhere.
Well, that's the trouble with your kind. You just don't seem to appreciate the greater need for public health. Any decent human being would have a house to go to the bathroom in.
I know, right? Like...
Yeah.
What do? You know, if you're just like visiting this place on vacation,
hold it in. Suck it in.
A lot of people told me this is a good place to come, like tourist at and like visit. And it's like if you're not like owning a place here, it's like awkward.
Nice place to visit, but don't want to live here.
I don't know. At times, I kind of question whether it is a good place to visit, considering how.
So were you actually ousted from the rain by police, or were you just simply?
We were told we had to stand at least 14 feet away from the building. That there was some sort of code that said that. I mean, it's not posted. There's only
who told you that?
Three main no's that are posted.
Policemen or a security guard?
They were police. They were dressed in black and not the ranger outfits.
Ooh, maybe the SS, sort of left over from the olden days?
They were driving a black car, you know, parked it in the middle of the road like they didn't care.
But they had no black helicopter.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like we were trying to, like, run out of
it. It's legal to stand next to any building you want. You just can't sit down next to a building within 14 feet. You can advise these clowns next time they show up to read the law.
Because we weren't sitting down. Like, we were kind of leaning against the wall.
Leaning is still legal.
We were chilling, you know, relaxing, as it were. I know that's frowned upon some places.
Well, you got to have enough money to properly relax. You don't. Yeah, come on.
All right. Like, how am I able to be so relaxed when I should obviously have more worries in my life?
Well, you got to contribute to the local economy. Come on.
Well, yeah. That's...
actually kind of where all my money goes.
Well, and perhaps if more of your money should go, then you would be better liked.
I mean, there has been some struggles, you know, when it comes to making money on the road, as someone might do if they were like a jewelry or gem.
Speaking of jewelry, I see you're carrying a box of jewelry. Have you been otherwise molested for, should we say, displaying your wares?
Not recently. Some of the laws have changed, or maybe the structure of how
court decisions have changed. I don't know.
Yeah.
The laws are pretty much still there, I think.
The laws are still there, but I think what I heard, anyways, is that federally they decided that state laws couldn't really step on our infringement.
And actually, as you're going to hear later in a subsequent interview, there was a state ordinance that went into effect in January that stopped the localities from criminalizing specific kinds of vending. So, for example, Santa Cruz's law that you can't vend your handicraft, but you can vend your book. You can't vend your jewelry, but you can vend your music, is out the window, is my understanding. I haven't talked to city attorney directly about that, but that seems to be the practice on the streets these days.
Basic rights as human beings, to suit, you know, whatever.
It's a good issue that I should.
Economic need they thought they had at the time.
I should be up on that, but I'm not. But on there, we do have our expert here, Lisa. Lisa, what's the story on the vending situation?
On the vending situation?
Yeah.
Well,
Lisa is an activist who's now housed, I think she's from Germany, and she was instrumental in helping to organize people some months back in a group, a homeless activist group that was concerned with supporting protests in, I guess it was October or November, at the post office in terms of demanding police leave alone people who are sleeping together in groups. And, of course, that ultimately, what happened, people migrated to the Ross camp and stayed there, and then police began to encourage that. And then we have the city council now moving to disperse everybody with pretexts of shelter that are flimsy and inadequate and a rather bad cover job, to say the least.
And get caught wherever you want to? I don't know. What is the law here?
Well, that's the law is...
Because it's me, you can't.
No, you're not supposed to. You're never supposed to vend crystals. The only thing you can vend is the literature, music, some artwork that is actually created by you, but that isn't a handicraft. And you have to do it inside the sacred squares. You know, the disced areas on Pacific Avenue. But I've heard that for some reason, and I got to get refresh my memory on this, that has either expired, been replaced, been appealed, been repealed, something like that. So.
Yeah. I don't know if the square. I think the squares were tied in with a lot of their ideas of how and where we should.
We also have a city council that has four so-called progressives. There's someone that I'm waiting for. Let us end it here. Alicia.
Is that a new Olympus recorder that you're using there?
It may be a new one. I got one the other day. I have an old one too, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it looks like it has dual recording mics for stereo input.
Oh, really?
Gives you a better quality of sound. I've been looking at them actually for a while, as I do audio sampling for sound work.
Really? So you are outside yourself?
Yeah. Especially outside. You get a lot of cool sounds out and about in the world.
And are you sleeping outside?
No. I have a vehicle that I travel around in.
Are you living illegally in your vehicle, mister?
Is that illegal?
It was until the Boise versus Martin decision, or Martin versus Boise, whatever.
Some controversy about that, because I know we used to like travel around like, you know, with
the ordinances of
or something.
Under the ordinances of Santa Cruz, it's
traveling.
Under the ordinances of Santa Cruz, it's illegal, but the ordinances can't really be enforced because of court decisions regarding the unconstitutionality of a similar ordinance in Boise, Idaho.
So I heard they got a pretty good handle on their classic vehicle plates there. You get like an exceptional amount of time if you register one there.
Hmm.
I mean, you'd have to be living there, of course. But, you know, a friend of mine said it, his isn't going to expire until like 2050.
Well, I will, I'm not quite sure I understand all of that, but we've been talking with...
Ajawa.
Thank you, man. Talking with...
Mark Brody.
Mark, you have a tale of, housing adventures?
Yes, and it's been a rather unhappy tale, I hate to say. They keep telling me that I'm near the top of the list of getting housing, which I desperately need, and I have a fixed income, and I could meet their system and pay a third of my income, which is what they require. And so I immediately returned the paperwork and said, yes, I want that room you have available. And within a couple of days, they wrote me back and said, sorry, we rented it to somebody else.
Charming. And we've been talking with?
Mark Brody.
She said, I watch him walk down Main Street, a sweet one-man parade. He'd tip his hat and just like that, another score he'd made. I'd watch the girls all watch him, moths drawn to the flame. The money shook and laughter flowed from the way he played the game. He played the game. Some said he was a rambler, some said he was a rake. Some said he was a gambler, some said he was a fake. But I knew him like no one else, a gentleman was he. His days belonged to himself, his nights belonged to me. Belonged to me. And that talking in the town square, in the taverns of the shops, I hear them talking everywhere. That talking never stops. But all their words of wisdom won't make you go away. The day they close the factory down, I had nothing left to say. Said to take care of the mother now, since my father died. I'm raising baby brother Tim, the way my father tried. His dirty is in the factory and in that furnace plant. But they settled up for $10 a week, and the bitterness is past. It did not last. So they're moving somewhere else now with their cloths and fabric press. They've found themselves another town where they'll make shirts for less. And that is why he said last night he won't watch the old town die. But I would not take what he tried to be when he told me goodbye. And they're talking in the town square, in the town of the shops. I hear them talking everywhere, they're talking never stops. But all their words of wisdom won't make you go away. The day they close the factory down and nothing. about. Talking of the hard times and the young folks moving out. Yes, they're talking as if talking can make everything all right. But all the talking never done for bringing it back tonight, but tonight. And they're talking, 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 talking in the shops. They hear them talking everywhere, they're talking never stops. But all their words of wisdom won't make you go away. The day they closed the factory down, I had nothing left to say.
And that was Harry Chapman, The Day They Closed the Factory Down. Apparently it was recorded back in November of 2011 and features video from 2008 if you want to go check it out online. The Day They Closed the Factory Down. So the front page story on the Sentinel today, Seeking Shelter, probably written yesterday after the city council meeting, by Jessica York. Santa Cruz identifies parking lot for pilot safe sleeping site, lot 24, which is a long rectangular property, according to York, north of Depot Park between Chestnut and Washington Streets, has a 50-person sleeping program taking over about 52 parking spaces from about 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., run by a nonprofit or faith-based organization. It will be broken down during the daytime. This was chosen rather than an alternative transitional encampment model, although York has the, well, I don't know if it's courtesy or good sense or just common sense to put transparent in quotes, I'm sorry, to put transitional in quotes, because all these transitional encampments, as they're called, don't transition into anything except the sidewalks again. There's nothing. There's no housing to transition to. So it's an illusion being spread by local bureaucrats who want to get money from the government agencies that are, you know, they've been playing with the fad. Oh, we only want a pathway to housing. More recently, the fad has been emergency shelter. Now that's why they're into emergency shelter now, which at least provides temporary shelter. But this is very temporary. It's only for 30 days. It's only for 50 sleeping spaces, actually, and that's probably 50 people. And if you add that, we got 50 people there, maybe 60 people over at the Boneyard campground they're talking about opening. Then you have the shelter out on 7th Avenue, which is full, but let's say it wasn't. That has 100 spaces. But that's which people who aren't using the Ross Camp now use that shelter and the Laurel Street Women and Children's Shelter for another 50 spaces. They're claiming that all those will deal with the 100 to 300 people in Ross Camp, assuming the Ross Camp people want to go to highly controlled shelters where you don't have privacy, you abandon all drugs at the door. I'm not saying that it should be a wonderful place where everybody should be allowed to have fun shooting up whenever they want, but some people are addicted. They're not going to go to places where those conditions exist, at least as long as they're addicted. And that to assume that they will, and to say, okay, well then, if you're not going to do that, we will simply sweep away the current shelter you have, but provide no shelter, is I guess some people would call that tough love. I call that sort of just simply straightforward cruelty and deprivation of shelter. And it's being pushed with this kind of drug war narrative that you can hear at a hysterical pitch, or you could if you were at the Tuesday City Council meeting. In any case, York's article makes no mention of the fact that the proposed safe shelter program that is being now denounced by community members because it's, oh, I think there's some, there's a business guy nearby who has been raging about it and saying he will sue the city. I believe his name is Bradley Olin, Upper West Side resident, or maybe he's not, maybe he's just simply a critic. Trying to find it here in the article. But it's all, this article, it's, auto body shop owner Dan Foy. He has a business at 251 Washington Street, proposed to, he would destroy his shop to have a safe sleeping area there. I don't know, I don't think the businesses near the Coral Street shelter have been destroyed. I haven't heard any complaints that they've been destroyed. So I think, I mean, this is NIMBY hysteria at its finest. And it's, but really being missed by all these people is the fact that this kind of a minor amount of shelter, which might be good actually to use as overflow for the Ross camp, because that way the Ross camp could be made much more habitable, much safer, much more a true sort of encampment area where people could use with adequate water, adequate facilities, and so forth, at least until such time as other options can be opened up. Instead, this is simply a device, these shelter proposals by sweet-tongued Susie O'Hara. I call her smiley-voiced Susie. I've got a variety of negative designations for her because of her behavior on these issues, which runs counter to the interests of homeless people, but appears to act in a positive way. For example, she goes out there and organizes cleanups and gets the fire chief involved in trying to not eliminate the camp, she says, but to make it safer. But, of course, that's only until April 17th, when her proposals, which is what she's cheer-led and spearheaded at the city council, and pushed through to the exclusion of other possibilities, other more spacious areas, the opportunity to have nonprofits open up areas in on their locations or on locations that the city could provide that might actually really provide real space and provide some real options for the Ross camp. She vetoed all these options. And how can she veto them? She isn't the city council. We don't have, you know, a dictator system. But we actually have here is a very powerful staff that has been essentially laying out the agenda for the city council, essentially deep-sixing the agenda with the collusion of the mayor and the city manager that has been presented as an alternative by the at least some of the new city council members like Drew Glover. And we also have the split-up of this, the hoped-for progressive majority of four, which was no longer a progressive majority. And that's what I'm going to do now is play a bit of the final half hour. It's actually the final 15 minutes, maybe the final 10 minutes, of the Tuesday City Council meeting on March 19th, out of which this proposed Lot 24 Depot Park property, it's not actually on Depot Park, it's in a parking lot near Depot Park, came, and which also dumped the idea of a transitional encampment. This is not an encampment, this is a safe sleeping spot only at night. So it's it provides less privacy, less storage area, less occupational time when people can actually be there. And it's what it really is the bare minimum of stuff they can quickly fix up as an apparent way to comply with the Boise versus Martin court decision, which says you can't go after homeless people outside with no camping laws or no sitting laws or no trespassing laws for public property unless you have places for them. So they're claiming these are the places. But since they're places for less than 10% of the homeless, well, let's say less than 15 or 20%, let's be generous, of the entire homeless community, and certainly less than 50 or 60% of the Ross community, probably far less, it won't stand the test of the court. And that's why Attorney Anthony Prince and the Ross Camp Council is moving to prepare an injunction to stop that. Whether they'll actually do it, because it's a hard thing for people to get together, particularly people who are unsheltered, with using, you know, living out of tents and facing the difficulties that that entails. We'll see if they can do it or not. But let's listen to the for another grueling 10 minutes. The Santa Cruz City Council do its. We'll pretend everything's okay, and we'll pretend we're working on something will actually work. And well, here they are. So of the 540-odd sites in the city or around the city owned by city-owned property, the city council allowed the staff to eliminate all but three of them as being not usable, which, of course, is preposterous. But they did that. And here you're going to hear Mayor Martine Watkins suggesting, well, we got three sites we're considering. One was San Lorenzo Park, which they ruled out. Another was a site over on East Cliff, they also ruled that out. And so they finally settled on Lot 24. Drew Glover, who you're going to hear, makes the initial point that this is not enough, which, of course, is the point I've been making. But he doesn't carry through on this. We had asked him to make a specific motion that there would be no closing of the Ross Camp on April 17th unless and until there was place for every single individual. Not whether they hoped there would be, or they expected there would be, or they predicted or targeted that there would be, or they were working to make sure there would be, but that there would actually be. And we asked him, I asked him to do this myself when we had this meeting with him on Monday out with the Ross Camp Council, regardless of whether the council, other council members agreed with it or not, that it should be made real clear that there was inadequate space, and that to pretend otherwise was to mislead both the actual camp residents, sympathizers of the people out there, and also people who are opponents of the Ross camps being there, or opponents of there being homeless people in Santa Cruz. People who are just trying to get a clear sense of what's going on, that it is not accurate or fair or truthful to go along with this idea that these two spots, and by two spots I mean the one final spot that they chose for a safe overnight sleeping area, so-called, the depot site, and then this reopened, very expensive boneyard campground that they had open last year for a total of 110 spots, is going to deal with the hundreds of people at the Ross Camp, much less the more than 1,000 to 2,000 people in Santa Cruz, and thereby allow the police to, let's say, stop people from camping wherever the hell they'll need to camp once they get driven out of Ross Camp, which will be in the parks, in the Poganip, in the downtown area, on the beaches and the neighborhoods and in the business areas, because that's where they'll go. And to pretend otherwise, pretend that the police can stop them when there's no adequate shelter, is just a lie. And we're going to try to make sure it's really a lie by making a lawsuit out of the whole situation, or at least I'm a supporter of that lawsuit. I'm not a plaintiff, because I don't live out of Ross Camp, but I'm certainly a supporter.
So now we're down, if I'm hearing correctly, in terms of the two that the council can prioritize are Site 2 and Site 5. Is it? That's correct. Okay, Councilmember.
It's my understanding neither of those
sites member Glover
enough space and collaboration, even with the Salvation Army and the 1220 River Street, to accommodate all of the people at the site, specifically the Ross Camp. Is that correct?
No, I don't believe that's a correct assertion. I don't believe between River Street Camp, 50 sites at either lot 24 or the Benchlands.
So let me let's go back and listen to Susie O'Hara, because that's the woman who's now speaking, respond to Glover's claim that that's not adequate. She, of course, contests it. And that's fine, because that's her narrative. That's what she and Tina Scholl, both people in the city manager's department, who have been providing all this data and studies and plans and promises that the River Street camp, the one that they're now going to try to reopen, that they promised would be open until April, but then they closed it in October, sending everybody out into nowhere and essentially to the Ross camp area, which is where people have ended up. She is suddenly to be relied upon as an authority here. Nobody on the council challenged her and said, wait a minute, I'm afraid I don't believe that. I don't mean to, you know, be a rude, but I think we need some more evidence of that, because the number of beds you have does not comport with the number of people who are out at Ross Camp. But here is Susie O'Hara's response.
I don't believe that's a correct assertion. I think between River Street Camp, 50 sites at either lot 24 or the Benchlands, in addition to capacity that might be at our other sheltering options, that is our target number that we expect.
Notice the wording, target number that we expect. It has nothing to do with the number of people who are currently at Ross Camp who will need shelter, which is in the hundreds, or at least between 100 and 200 at the very least. So what the hell is she talking about, and why isn't she being challenged on these figures is really my question. Here's more.
Trying to achieve
target. All kinds of, you know, nice slippery phrases that will allow her, if someone was a challenger later and say, wait a minute, what does all this, we have three or four times as many people as you said, oh, well, that was our target. But see, because she's leading this discussion and no one is challenging her, they're accepting these figures as though they were real, solid figures.
And 50... So, just because we didn't have the tent layout like we did with lot 24, you would anticipate that there would be a total of 50 if we open up both the sites, or 50, say, at the San Lorenzo Benchlands?
No, I think either site we can.
And this was another issue, and we talked about this with Glover before the meeting. Glover had the impression that O'Hara was talking about opening up the River Street Boneyard campground for 50 sites, and then also a site like the depot site as a safe sleeping at during the night area, but also a transitional encampment site, such as in San Lorenzo Benchlands, where they had one a year and a half ago, although they would be moving it further to the south in the proposal that they made on Tuesday night. But she really made it quite clear, we are not interested, A, in transitional encampments, which would be a 24-hour encampment, where you could come and go, not just a place you come at night, which is what this Depot Park site is supposed to be. But also, they're not interested in two additional sites. They're not interested in having two sites for 50 tents, let's say, each, which is what was one site being, let's say, the depot site, the other being a transitional encampment. They don't want to have those two sites. They're going to have simply the one, plus, of course, the other expensive Boneyard campground that they ran last year. They can afford to do it this year because they're getting money from the federal or the state government. I guess it's the state government for this. A big chunk of change. But, of course, that chunk of change that will go to an expensive, super-managed site for a small number of people, as happened last year with the Boneyard barbed wire campground, the River Street campground, will deny those services to the much larger homeless community. They won't be getting those services, and those people will be sleeping and camping in the neighborhoods, in the parks, on the beaches, and elsewhere. And you'll be hearing the screams and yowls and cries of the neighbor that their children are about to be molested, that their children are scared of these homeless people, that their bikes are being stolen. And some of these things are true claims. I don't think the stuff about the children is true. But I think, you know, that there is an increase in petty theft. And that happens when poor people are around. They have a few other options. Sorry, folks. That can happen. And it does happen. So get used to it or address it, one of the two. And if you think you can address it with police, get ready for a much more open class war. Here's some more from this meeting as Susie O'Hara leads this cavalcade of foolishness.
We can likely I mean, we have to get down to the granularity here, but the intention is to fit 50 individuals at either of the sites, not combined.
The intention is to help them. So it isn't even the promise, the commitment, the facilities. It's the intention. And then she adds, not at both sites. We're only going to have one site. We're going to cram everybody into one of these sites, plus the other one. There are four sites they're considering continuing with shelter for. Two of them are currently in use, and one of them mostly full, one of them not so much. The Laurel Street is not so much full, but it's got pretty tight restrictions. 7th Avenue is full. That's the winter shelter. And then the two sites they're talking about is this expensive Boneyard 1220 River Street site, and then this one, the Depot site, that was headlined in the Sentinel today and is the subject of so much controversy in the neighborhood because the NIMBYs are out in force. The idea of establishing a safe parking area, or actually a safe sleeping zone in a parking lot — this isn't really for vehicles, it's for people in tents — is, it shouldn't be such a frightening idea. It's been tried in other cities and been successful, but it's being it's being opposed in a frenzied, hysterical way with a lot of very anti-homeless propaganda, with the big leading edge being the drug war situation.
And what is the feasibility of, since I spoke with the fire chief about, and also the people at the camp, the feasibility of exploring the limit?
At this time, I would not recommend moving forward with the program. We put a ton of consideration into the program for a year or so ago for the purposes of the River Street camp. That requires... It has accessibility issues, especially for public safety personnel, AMR personnel. The road all the way up to the clubhouse is quite challenging. In addition, just the level of accessibility, quite frankly, for folks who are mobility impaired, I think would be extremely challenging for folks. I mean, this really needs to be a site that people can access pretty easily.
That's Susie O'Hara. And, you know, this idea that the camp in the Poganip is not usable has been dismissed by homeless activists for 30 years. As I say, it seemed to be a real good alternative that has been ignored. Mostly, the past pretexts against this have been environmental concerns. Oh, it's our untrammeled Poganip, our pristine wilderness. We don't want to even give up 1 acre of the 580 odd acres up there to those homeless people. You know, that can't be. This is to be, you know, for the benefit of highfalutin bike riders and, you know, upper middle class campers and students who are paying hefty fees and so forth. So O'Hara needs to be more seriously questioned. It could easily be said, well, Glover could have said, I'd like you to go back and look at that again. I don't think that's adequate. I think we have to consider this proposal and others. You're eliminating all kinds of places and reducing it to one or two areas. But I think Glover is, to some extent, and it's hard to really judge, and maybe I should... He's planning to leave town, so I don't know if we're going to get too much discussion from him in the next week or so. He should be returning for the April 9th city council meeting, though. I believe that's coming up. He, in theory, it's becoming more and more less likely, but he has been acting as though he at least hopes to get a majority on the council for his proposals. And to do that, you have to propose, well, he has to, at least, whether he's going to get that or not, he needs to propose things that are real, meet the needs, and are not simply cosmetic proposals that are designed to placate certain conservative elements in the community or go along with staff recommendations. He has to take a different stand. And when he called a bunch of us to get together 2 months ago to work with his interns on finding specifics for proposals, and indeed tried to introduce them and then was thwarted by Mayor Watkins, we had hoped that there would be some actual progress here, or at least a statement of principle that could afford progress later in the future when a better council was elected, or when better, more pressure was put on, or more public information put the kind of spotlight on the false narratives being presented by the police and the city manager's go-to women, Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl, assistant city managers, not to mention Cynthia Matthews and the nasty, bigoted minority of the council that she really heads.
So that would not be my recommendation at this time. So given the situation, does council member want to move with a recommendation to pursue a safe sleeping site at either?
Taking into consideration and the community, and make sure that there's the inclusion of community conversation around it. It seems like Lot 24, so I'd make a motion to establish a safe sleeping site at Lot 24.
And in doing that, he surrenders, because in moving for a safe sleeping site at Lot 24, someone might say, well, that's just only the first step. He can propose more, and perhaps he will say that, and perhaps he will do that. But in not raising the issue that this is a completely inadequate site and emphasizing this fact, he gives credibility to the narrative that this is somehow some kind of solution. It is a good, as I say, overflow area for the Ross camp, but it cannot serve as a replacement, even with the Boneyard 1220 River Street campground and the two shelter areas out on Laurel and 7th Avenue. It just doesn't give enough space. Aside from being probably, it's not something that homeless people will choose anyway, given the kinds of severe restrictions they have there. But we go on.
Okay, there's a motion by Councilmember Glover to establish a safe sleeping site at Lot 24. Is there a second?
I'd like to hear other
Chris Crone.
Personally, don't want to see it in the park. I think that this would, if we're going in this direction, this would be the best place. It's a degraded, it's an asphalt area. It's not in a park. I think it would be a better way to go. If other council members are, I don't know what you're going to propose, if anything, and we're going to leave it here like this and just move on to our next meeting.
Is that a second?
And why is Crone also proceeding with this without clarifying that this is completely inadequate? Again, it gives credibility to the idea that this is a step forward in resolving the problem without really going to the basic heart of it, which is you're trying to close the Ross camp. That's what you're trying to do. This is not going to do it if what you want to do is set up a real area where people can go to instead of the Ross camp. And therefore, I propose instead that we will only do this if we add to it the following additional shelter areas, A, B, and C. But no one on this council, given particularly the hostile audience that was out there that didn't want to see that, any kind of encampments, perhaps that was an element of it, is willing to do that. But that's what has to be done if you're really talking about a solution along the lines of what the city council is supposedly discussing.
A motion by Councilmember Glover, a second by Councilmember Crone. Further discussion, Councilmember
Crone. Another consideration is
Cynthia Matthews.
For lack of better terms, the fallout during the daytime, the San Lorenzo Park has been so impacted by, let's just say, negative uses, chop shops and drug dealing and all sorts of stuff over time. It's made it really unusable.
This claim that the San Lorenzo Park, because of the Benchlands camp in the fall of 2017, has become unusable is to me preposterous on its face. But no council member challenges that, and Matthews presents no evidence of that. She simply states it as though it's some kind of established wisdom. It's established bigotry is what it is. And in not challenging it, you invite the community to accept it as truth. That's the city council we have. That's the glorious, shining new council majority that we have.
Long periods of time. It's clearly that there's no good site that we're found it. So I guess I'm gravitating to against my best instincts, but.
She's gravitating to Lot 24, the depot site, in spite of her best instincts. I call them her worst instincts, but she regards them as her best instincts. And so it is that people who are in a prejudiced state of mind often regard that as, well, they favor what they should be opposing and vice versa. Or let's, you know, she has a right to think what she wants. That's not the issue. But unfortunately, she's a policymaker. And in doing that, bigotry has to be essentially called out for what it is. Bigotry is bigotry, and it's as simple as that. She doesn't want to see these campgrounds anywhere in the city, and that's her determination. It doesn't matter how homeless people suffer. Tough shit is essentially what she's doing, although that's not what she's saying.
I think we are looking at it as a 30-day temporary window.
And she's moved to make it a 30-day temporary site rather than a 60 or a 90-day. You're going to hear that as well.
No.
I just realized that we have members in the audience that are providing their own solutions or suggestions, and we haven't even spoken about them yet. So there's one here about the Locust Street Door Garage that someone brought up during public comments, and then I saw another suggestion out there about actually positioning the transitional space on the soccer field, which is named after Scott Kennedy, founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and who I believe would be open to closing his soccer field to allow for us to do some transitional or temporary space. With the staff, I would ask the question, what are your thoughts on the Locust Street Garage and put it on Depot Park?
Now, here are two more proposals. Kennedy Soccer Field and the Locust Street Garage as safe sleeping spots. I don't know if he's abandoning the attempt to get transitional encampments. That's been shot down, again, not really by the council, but by Susie O'Hara. And also an earlier resolution, essentially, I believe, by Justin Cummings. I could be wrong about that. I have to go back and check that one, too. But again, even in proposing these additional sites, he makes two mistakes. One is in not, again, clarifying we need more. We got to have more sites, or it is misleading for us to provide one or two sites because it's not going to do it, and it's going to ultimately rebound against us. It won't serve the homeless. It won't serve the community. It'll provoke hostility, ultimately, in the community to have inadequate sites proposed. Plus, or else it'll simply cause suffering by the homeless community, which is really what's likely to happen. Because they're likely to go ahead to pretend everything's rosy, close the Ross camp, and then just not care unless and until an effective lawsuit is brought. And if that happens, then it's up to judges, which I have little confidence either. Although federal judges you have more of a chance with than the local judges who are sort of hand in glove with local authorities. The other mistake Glover makes is to ask Susie O'Hara for her opinion. Rather, it is appropriate to simply propose it and to say, in spite of the difficulties proposed by Susie O'Hara, I would recommend that the staff work on the following three proposals from the audience. Again, figuring out which is the best of these three, or look into them again for ways that problems can be ameliorated. In other words, to present it, but not to leave it in her lap as something she can make a decision on and give her expert opinion on. O'Hara's opinion's already been given. We found one spot, Lot 24, or they said three, but they really go for Lot 24, which is the depot lot, which is raising an incredible stink in the community because they have youth playing soccer there during the day, even though this was a spot only from 9 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning.
I'm looking for a public director to maybe weigh in. Thank you, Mark. To weigh in on the Locust Street Garage. I mean, I can say generally the lower level of Locust Street Garage, that entire garage is used very, very heavily. I think it's maybe fully subscribed with parking permits, if not nearly subscribed. So I think that it was taken out because of one of our initial criteria. We're looking at conflicting uses, and we already have de facto contracts with people to park their vehicles. So, but
before you do, if I may,
And this is Tina Scholl, who is sort of the other face of the city. Well, it's two-faced isn't quite the word, although these entire presentations, I think, are two-faced. But she is, along with Susie O'Hara, the person running this smooth, everything's-okay narrative, do what we say, just get those damn homeless out of Ross Camp, and we'll provide you with the cover story, which is what the story here is. We'll talk forever about housing and alternatives, but the ones we create will be always a bit in the future and always rather tentative and stuff we're targeting, and, gee, if we only had the money and if only the county would cooperate, we'll have a series of excuses as we proceed. And so she calls up someone to dismiss the Locust Street Garage. Our cars slated to park there at night when this would happen? I wonder. I mean, I think she's talking about parking during the day, but who knows? She just doesn't want that to happen, so she calls on her friends and the staff, her fellow experts, to back her up. And, of course, they do.
In the interest of time, and then in the interest of also many, many options
Maxine
to
Watkins,
consider, and considering the kind of the item before us, I'm wondering if we could potentially have this conversation offline or revisit it at a future time, given that there's many, many sites to explore.
Then I would change the motion to move the conversation.
And that's Glover surrendering again. It is true that they were getting into a late night conversation, and they had another long thing about the library and transportation to go into in this session. But again, hold another council session if you need to, if that's what you want to do. But get these issues addressed, particularly the issue of panicking people in the Ross camp, and not to mention panicking people in the neighborhoods. One of the big issues here around the Ross Camp or this depot site is they're not providing time for a lot of community input, which of course means NIMBY input, generally speaking. But some not. I mean, I think there are some people who have been influenced by the NIMBY propaganda who might be drawn into a more reasonable frame of mind once they realize how heavily managed all this is going to be, which really means perhaps it's not going to be used by a significant number of the homeless people because they don't like to be treated like six-year-olds or prisoners in the dock. But it will, you know, allow for people in the neighborhood to be reassured, I guess. I mean, they've already seen no problems with the River Street campground between the months of March and October of last year.
Of the establishment of a safe sleeping zone or a transitional encampment or safe parking program to the April 9th council meeting. And
he's moving it to the April 9th council meeting because he will not be at the next council meeting, which is coming up next Tuesday on March 26th.
Make sure that we secure the language that the Ross Camp will not be closed unless there is ample shelter space for those currently living in the camp at that period of time.
Now, this was what we asked him to put forward. And here it suddenly sounds like he's fulfilling his promise. But the problem is he doesn't complete it because he's interrupted.
Is that a motion as part of the... No, draw my original motion and then put a new one on there that says we move the decision-making on April 9th on these issues.
And that's a little ambiguous. He says we move it till April 9th, but he doesn't repeat the stuff about the Ross Camp. Now, maybe, and we have to see when we look at the action agenda as it comes out, which will be in a few days, That's a thing that happens some days after. You'll get to see the video will be put up on the city's website, and then the agenda, what actually was passed at that council meeting, will also be put up. It actually should be up there now because that council meeting was not didn't have that many agenda items that the city staff can't get it up, shouldn't have gotten it up by now. But I looked earlier today and I didn't see it, so I'm going to have to talk about it on Sunday. So, but he doesn't repeat that language, which worries me. It makes me think that though he mentioned it initially, it is not becoming a part of the April 17th date is no longer a certain date, because that's what it should be. Because to me, it's not only a certain date, it's an eliminated date. It's a canceled date because they don't have any shelter for the 17th. However, none of the council members, and certainly the two staff members who are pushing this false narrative, want to say so. So they don't.
So I suspect, had we given
Susie O'Hara,
Director Bettle, an opportunity to discuss the Logan Street Garage, I don't think we would. I think we'd have a strong suggestion not to consider that at this time.
This is the reason Susie O'Hara, it seems to me, she wants to push the idea rapidly through of Lot 24. And the reason she wants this done, Glover is asked to be delayed until April 9th because they want to discuss some of the other items like the question of the Locust Street Garage, the question of the Scott Kennedy soccer field. These are good, you know, it's good at least to consider a variety of things, hopefully a number of them together, not one or the other. But the reason that O'Hara wants to proceed is she needs to give the city protective cover by April 17th. And to do that, she needs to get them to move fast if they're going to meet the April 17th closure date. And that, you might say alternately, Glover, who is really aware that there is no such real shelter for these people by that time, I think he understands that, I certainly hope he does, is trying to push for what will ultimately be people will realize they can't get the April 17th date. It's going to have to be extended again. But unless that is made really clear now, it's going to frighten a lot of people in the camp into leaving and going somewhere else, which I guess is really what the police, rangers, and those who are trying to close the Ross camp want to do, even though it means they will be less safe, the neighborhoods and the people who are there will be less clean, the services won't be available. It's just they'll get rid of the troubling visual blight of the Ross camp as they see it.
And in addition to that,
Susie O'Hara,
I think we would also have significant challenges with Depot Field. So it would be my strong preference for us to try to move forward.
She's ignoring the fact, this is Susie O'Hara, who now, I think she feels she runs the meeting, and perhaps she does, that there's a motion to move ahead right now by just delaying this. Okay, what is she interrupting for when the motion is about delaying this whole thing? She doesn't have any expertise to present on this. She just wants to rush in additional information that will rush the decision, which she is successful in doing, because they ended up choosing Lot 24 at this session as she wanted them to do.
Or I think April 9th is too close to when we're trying to make a difference with regard to the encampment, and then also...
And, of course, by make a difference, she means bulldoze the encampment. She's got some nice language there, but let's look at what the real facts are.
With trying to open up the River Street program and this program at the same time, we are moving forward with the Salvation Army. And we would essentially be postponing opening that program and serving our community and not moving forward quickly.
So, she wants to move forward quickly with a token program, but not with a program that actually deals with the needs of the community. And that's why what she's saying is fundamentally deceptive.
So, I do think it would be beneficial for the council to try to do this tonight. Would that help if you heard from our...
Again, no one called on her. She just interrupted and came up with that, which as though she were a member of the council, as though she could make these decisions and influence the council, and does. And in fact, she really is the eighth member of the council on this particular issue. And that's something which the progressive majority, if there ever is one, or hopes to be one, has to resist and is not resisting. No council members interrupting say, I don't think we asked you, Susie, for an opinion on the subject of these issues. We would like to talk about them later. And what she's saying instead is, no, you have to do it now or else we can't do the cover job on the Ross camp. Hey, come on, guys. You know. And then she has to put it in diplomatic language so it isn't so obvious, of course.
Yeah, so based on that
and here's Glover.
Recommendation, then I'll stick with my original motion to instruct staff to look at to implement a small-scale safe seating and storage site for up to 50 people, or 450 people, make that solid language, and to use Lot 24 with a community input and problem-solving process.
And this is the complete surrender on two grounds. First, he abandons all his previous proposals and says, okay, we agree with you, Susie. It's got to be Lot 24. You're right. And then secondly, he says, and there's no additional transitional encampment area that we had, and this is what he was promising us the day before, that he was sure was a part of Susie O'Hara's proposal and was what he had pushed for and was what the council had decided on, which is not just a safe sleeping zone at night, but also additionally a transitional encampment area. So and now he himself is passing a resolution that only talks about one of these areas and talks about an area which will not provide even a meaningful fraction of the space necessary for a real relocation from the Ross camp rather than simply a demolition of it and a scattering of people into the neighborhoods, the downtown, the beaches, and everywhere.
30-day period renewable in 30-day increments.
Cynthia Matthews only wants 30 days.
That was understood in the discussion, but I'd like to have that included in the motion. Is that agreeable?
Yeah, my only concern with that is the lack of continuity. Like, I understand 30 days is comfortable monthly, just like a rent kind of structure, but I think there should be some kind of continuity to be able to get good data so it's not just a month of data and then if we decide to close it because it's a bad month for whatever reason, which I don't imagine it being, why not do it for 90 days and then reassess?
And I don't know that Glover is being particularly candid here. I don't think he likes limiting it to 30 days because he may feel that, people who are moving in deserve a little more stability than that. Although we're talking about a nighttime, every night show up and you can get a safe sleeping spot if you're one of the 50 lucky people that shows up. The rest of you, you get to sleep on the sidewalk or wherever the hell else you can go. And Matthews, on the other hand, is more candid. She doesn't want anything there, so the shorter the better. And all they need is something that on the very day of the closing of the Ross camp, they can say, see, we have a bed for you to the first 50 people. And the rest of the people are scared away, so suddenly there's nobody there at the Ross camp. Oh, good, see, we cleared it out, and then we can clear out the rest of these people in a month if we need to. That, I'm afraid, is really what's going on here.
50 days, but why 30 days? That's how it's been described at this point. So I think we can get to some of your questions.
And this is Tina Shull rushing in to help Cynthia Matthews.
We go through the permitting process as to what this performance metrics would look like and how
I'm sorry, Susie O'Hara.
Collect data for which you can make an informed decision. So I think for the intentionality around the 30 days was really just to have more touch points with the council and more touch points with the community, quite frankly, in terms of how the program is fitting into the neighborhood in consideration of not only the clients we're serving, but also those potential impacts, either real or perceived, with the adjacent uses.
In other words, 30 days, you're going to get more data in 30 days than in 60 days or 90 days? No, you're not. However, if you can, you can cut it short more quickly if you have to come back and renew it in 30 days. And that's, of course, what Matthews is pushing for. And she's backed up by Susie O'Hara.
Yeah, I can accept that, but I do just want to make sure that...
Why would he accept that?
Maybe my seconder will approve of this, but I want to make sure that there's language in there that says that we will not close the Ross camp until we for sure have the shelter spaces available, because for some people it was a little bit unclear in the last minutes or in the agenda report, so I just want to make sure that there's 50 beds on top of the 60 from the 1220 and then Salvation.
So he started out good. He wanted to make sure there's enough a space for everybody there. But then he says, so he just wants to make sure there are 50 beds on top of the 60 from the 1220 and the two shelters. In other words, so there's no more beds than have already been shown to be insufficient. If you have the two shelters open and the campground open and this safe sleeping spot open, it's a maximum of 150 beds or so. Well, it's 110, and beds isn't the right. It's like spaces on the ground or on a cot or on a mat on the floor. And it's spaces that are already being filled and will continue to be filled through the spring and the summer at these two shelters. So you're probably going to get no more than 150 spaces. And so to suddenly add to it, well, as long as these are open, that's okay, is to vitiate and eliminate the language that says we won't do it unless there's enough space for everybody in the Ross camp. He's trying to have it both ways, both Susie O'Hara's way and then the way that really he promised he would do to the Ross camp council.
Yeah, and I think that's in the previous direction from last week.
Yes.
And that is the language that was adopted last week. Okay, so we'll put it there. So we'll go ahead and...
And actually, that wasn't the language that was adopted last week. The only language adopted in the previous week was Justin Cummings' language that specific shelters would be opened. Specifically, one safe sleeping spot, the 1220 River Street, and then the other two shelters that are already open. So it's not in the language that there will be sufficient shelter for the Ross camp before it gets eliminated, but that rather those things that are opened are considered sufficient shelter.
Those are the motion made by Councilor Glover, seconded by Councilor Crone, with the clarification asked by Councilor.
Can I ask you one clarifying point?
Sure.
We did hear a presentation earlier in the evening on the adoption of some standard operating procedures.
And this is Tony Condotti, the city attorney, weighing in. That really kind of covers it, and that kind of covers my concerns. I could be proved to be wrong. I will wait to see what the language is and come back on Sunday. Probably should have waited until Sunday to give you all of this and these doubts and concerns. And we'll be having more discussion of this issue and, well, other stuff too. But you're going to have to tune in to find out. Meantime, give a call to 423-4833 if you'd like to help or be involved. If you want to get involved with the lawsuit, I'll put you forward to Alicia Cool, and you can talk to her. She's looking for support out there. Thank you for listening to this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
When the sun goes to bed, that's the time you raise your head. That's your lot in life, Lelania. Can't blame ya, Lelania. Arty-tart, la-di-da. Can your part get much sadder? That's your lot in life, Lelania. Can't blame ya, Delania. Run your hand through your hair, paint your face with despair. That's your lot in life, Delania. Can't blame ya. Lelenia. That's the time you raise your hand. That's your lot in life, Lelenia. I can't blame.